listening to WXRWLP Milwaukee 104.1 FM and RiverWestRadio.com globally. I'm your host, NTSC, and welcome to The Anti, a weekly primer on freedom. The Anti is anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchy, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-fascist, and more. If we're against so much, what do we stand for? The ideals of freedom. In this series, we explore what a free society would look like while recognizing that none of us today are truly free. Having said all that, even though the device you're listening on right now likely wasn't free, the radio waves you're listening to are. However, WXRW costs money to operate. To that end, you can always visit the station at 824 East Center Street, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and purchase a hat, a mug, or a t-shirt, and all proceeds will go directly to supporting the station. Or, if you like any of the programming that you hear on WXRW, reach out and become an official underwriter. Every little bit helps. And now you can also dial into River West Radio on your smart speaker of choice. Just tell your listening device at home to play WXRW River West Radio. We're on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's illegal to kill yourself. It's illegal to kill someone else, unless it's in self-defense. And very soon it's going to be illegal to have an abortion when Roe versus Wade is overturned. For a long time, I kind of wondered why the Republican Party would align itself with what we all, know as the quote-unquote pro-life camp, when the policies they enact categorically make life more difficult for everyone except themselves and their billionaire constituents. And I racked my brain for years trying to figure it out, because their motivations in all other regards were so plain and transparent. The rest of their platforms, stricter drug laws and higher sentences, fewer regulations for environmental protection, no labor unions, all of that. All of those platforms made sense within their overall ethos, namely business and profit are good and human rights are bad because they interfere with those profits inherently. Then it finally struck me. I feel like I really know why the Republicans are against legal, safe abortion. And trust me, it has literally nothing to do with morality or scripture or ethics or any high ground like that, but really is quite the opposite. So let's back up. By now, everybody knows that Justice Kennedy of the Supreme Court is stepping down. And the current administration is going to get a new judge. So, the piece of legislation that is in their crosshairs and has been for a while now is Roe versus Wade, famously. The landmark case that successfully secured abortion rights for all women. Over those years, those rights have been attacked, reduced, and threatened again and again, to the point where it's nearly impossible to actually get a safe legal abortion in some states. The Republicans have always mobilized their religious base to fight against abortion rights by pandering to, a natural dislike of murdering the unborn. Now, mind you, they have no issue with murdering children once they're actually in this world. And they murder them through starvation or poisoning, lead in the water, toxins in food, other forms of structural violence. And they really take no issue in murdering those children if they are not white. they just really emphasize the birth itself. They want everyone to be born. Every fetus needs to be born. And for years, I really struggled to understand why that was. And then it finally struck me, and I had an inkling, and I began to dig for the evidence. Before we get into the figures and the numbers, it really needs to be stated unequivocally. The fight against abortion rights is primarily violence against women. It's a direct attack on the bodily autonomy of women. Rich, white men want to exercise complete control over the bodily autonomy of all women and reducing or removing her right to a safe, expedient abortion with no questions asked is a fast way to remove her bodily autonomy. Other forms of attack on the bodily autonomy of women is the various forms of anti-trans legislation that have come up lately, like the bathroom bills and all that stuff. Legislation of that kind aims to remove all rights to bodily autonomy for trans women and also trans men alike. That's reason number one, violence against women. And that's pretty blatant. And really, we could stop right there if we wanted to. But I figured that's not enough of a motive for these Republican lawmakers. Yes, they really enjoy attacking the bodies of women through legislation, and they especially like endangering women's lives. But where is the financial incentive? That was what I was finally, at least to my satisfaction, able to answer. According to a study by Texas Technical University, the average American between 45 and 54 years of age is about $135,000 in debt. The highest debt comes typically from medical bills, followed by large loans such as vehicles, education, and housing. According to the credit bureau Experian, Americans die with an average of $62,000 in debt to their name, the burden of which then gets passed on to succeeding relatives. Debt is the engine that keeps the capitalist machine running. Well, why is that? For the answer to that question, you have to understand fundamentally how money is created and introduced into the system. A lot of people might not know this, but most of the money that circulates in the economy, really all of the money that circulates in the economy, fueling what economists will define as positive growth, is created solely through loans. So someone goes to a bank because they want a loan. They want to buy a house or a car, or they need to pay off an expensive medical procedure. They don't have the money in pocket, so they go borrow from their bank. This is the part that most people, I don't think, understand. And when I learned about this, it boggled my mind. So the person goes to the bank to get the loan. The bank doesn't reach into its pockets and loan the person pre-existing money. The bank's cash on hand doesn't get touched for the loan. All banks operate under what is called fractional reserve banking. It basically means they can create money from nothing, generating it as customers demand to fulfill loans. The bank doesn't pony up any dough. It literally creates money out of nothing, just adding zeros to the person's bank account as necessary to fulfill the requirements of the loan. Except, insidiously, that money represents a debt owed to the bank by the person. In this way, debt and money have a one-to-one correlation. Money is debt, and debt is money. And the real tragedy of it all is the fact that the money that is generated by the bank into thin air, The money that is created from thin air to fulfill that loan can never be paid back completely because it is due back with interest charged by the bank. So let's say I take out a loan for $1 million. That million can never truly be repaid because the second that $1 million is created, it is owed back with interest. Interest that cannot be generated without creating more money, which means more loans must be taken out. That is literally the only way money can be generated in our economy. The government itself even takes out loans from the Federal Reserve, which is a non-government bank. The government needs to take out loans to generate cash. That money can never be repaid because it immediately incurs debt by incurring interest. The system is really insane when you really start to understand it. Inflation is a built-in function of our economy, and so too is crippling, crushing mountains of debt. So I think you can probably see where this is going to lead us, and we'll get there. But there is kind of a secondary level to this, and there are probably tertiary levels as well, but we're focusing on at least these two parts of it for the purposes of today's show. Republicans really love private prisons. They love laws that put people away for long sentences for small crimes. Well, why? Well, because they're lobbied heavily by the private prison industry. How much do private prisons earn per inmate per year? Well, usually anywhere from $18,000 to $20,000 per inmate per year. So the math in that case just makes sense. The poorer a person is, or the more minority a person is, the more likely they are to get sucked into the prison industrial complex and just create money for private prisons, which then pay huge dividends to Republican legislatures. This also has the added benefit for the Republican legislator in that the poor and the disenfranchised can no longer vote, you know, once they've been imprisoned, and can therefore no longer exercise any rights whatsoever to potentially oust the legislators from their seats of power. Okay, so we can kind of see where this leads to. Why do Republicans so desperately want to overturn Roe versus Wade? Because the more human beings that are born, literally the more money is generated into the system. A single person represents, on average, $150,000 in debt creation. And the poorer a person is, the more likely they are to generate profit for the state in the course of their life through law enforcement and punitive damages. People equal debt. And as we saw before, debt equals money. So therefore, people equal money. And then add to that the fact that Republicans love to control the bodily autonomy of women, and you kind of have an open and shut case. If you're just joining us, you're tuned into WXRW River West Radio, 104.1 FM, and this is The Anti, a primer on freedom. I am your host, NTSC, and this week we're focusing on why the Republican Party is so adamant about anti-abortion legislation, and in particular, why Roe versus Wade is on their chopping block now that Justice Kennedy is stepping down. The long and short of it is actually pretty simple. You know, this is what we've been discussing. The more people you have, the more debt they incur, and the more money is funneled into the system. Because debt equals money and money equals debt. So the more of that is funneled into the system, specifically a system that disenfranchises the poor and empowers the very richest in the highest echelons, you know, of our society, all those jerks. Also, just Republicans love to control the bodily autonomy of women because a society with liberated women is always a healthier, more egalitarian society, and inequality is exactly what the Republican agenda kind of puts a real importance on. So what can we do about these issues? Really, over the last few weeks, I've spent too much time harping on issues without addressing solutions, which is something that I really need to get better at. So how do we fight against a system that enacts state violence against women's bodies while at the same time commodifying all of us into little more than debt-creating machines? I'll always take this opportunity to remind the listener that the views expressed here on The Anti are not the official views of WXRW. So what can we do about all of this? Well, what is my advice or my take? All of this is very personal to me, obviously. What's my take on this issue? As is always the case, my advice is certainly not to vote in a vain attempt to cling to what few liberties you have left afforded to you. We spent the last two entire episodes, an hour, talking about why elections and representative government as a whole can only take freedoms from you. They can never grant them. You know, nothing can be granted to you that you already have. Your freedoms and your right to complete self-determination, both are inherent to you, and they are imbued in you regardless of where you live or what you look like or, you know, how society would pretend to define you. Elections as a whole, as you know, as an architecture of kind of social progress, only actually serve to sap social movements of vital resources that could actually, you know, accomplish goals. And elected officials are, by their very definition, the poorest kind of proxy for you and your voice. So, how do we fight against the inherent structural violence of debt? That's a really tough one, especially in the constructs of this society. We're all, you know, forced through structural violence to sell our bodies and our finite lives for wages so we don't, you know, starve or die of exposure. We're not necessarily forced to take out huge loans, you know, which will create debt money, but for many, such loans are kind of as unavoidable as, you know, eating and breathing and drinking is. People are kind of forced by their circumstances, the more disenfranchised they are, to reach out for what they see as a lifeline, what they see as help, what they see as, you know, potentially their only option. And really, big loans from banks and credit unions are kind of one of the only ways out of a lot of the traps that people inherently find themselves falling into. So, we can't necessarily personally defeat the banks. And, you know, I wish we lived in a society where people could be lifted out of debt without reaching out for predatory, parasitic, vulturous loans. We can start with ourselves. So many solutions really start from within, I find. We can start by decommodifying our relationships with one another. So what does that mean? Well, don't treat the people in your life in a transactionary manner. So like if someone needs help and they, you know, want to pay you, don't accept the truly false equivalency of money as a payment. Don't accept any payment at all, in fact, you know. As much as possible, I encourage everyone to examine just how capitalism may have unconsciously infected your social relationships and the ways in which you relate to people around you and the ways that you approach your interactions. Capitalism is a specter that haunts every interaction that we have. And again, you know, it's laid bare in a lot of the phrases and the terminology that we use. I love pointing out these things because the phrases, the language that we use, so defines us. We, you know, quote unquote, pay each other attention. You know, we pay attention to each other as if attention were a finite or scarce commodity that could be paid. Even if you're going to do something just for the kindness of it, we call that paying it forward. That's so ridiculous when we help someone, you know, out of a non-selfish reason. We give of ourselves and expect things in return, when really the act of helping each other and lifting each other up is more than reward enough. And really, you know, every improvement that we make in someone else's life is a direct improvement in our lives. Fight against that zero-sum game mentality as much as possible. Changing the way you approach your relationships and the people around you will help alter your mindset and potentially theirs if you take the time to explain why you won't take payment for helping them. It's because you don't want to commodify your relationship with them. Your friendship with them is more important. So, the secondary question, if you want to fight against structural violence aimed at women's bodies, again, don't vote. Any state structure is inherently and sadly unavoidably patriarchal. Even if you vote for a woman candidate, her ability to actually enact change is completely dependent on and controlled by the patriarchal hegemony of the state in which she needs to work. Her hands, you know, are essentially tied. Also, it just kind of bears repeating, why would you want to cede your personal power into the hands of any proxy? Again, you know, power doesn't come out of nothing. It's not created in a vacuum. Power is yours. And when you vote for anybody, you cede that power to them. You submit to them. And, you know, you can wield your power more justly and more rightly than any proxy can. So for this question, how do we fight against the structural violence aimed at women's bodies? As is typically the advice I'll give, direct action is your only real way of effecting change against structural violence of that kind. Strike against your place of work and make sure that, you know, the powers that be know it's know that your strike is based entirely on abortion rights. March against positions of power, and again, make sure that it's very obvious that you're marching for abortions, that you're marching for the bodily autonomy of women. The more we can emphasize the importance of the bodily autonomy of women, the more we can talk about what real freedom is and that our freedoms are all inexorably linked. My personal freedoms start where yours start, and my personal freedoms end where yours end. Solutions to issues of this kind are always difficult to arrive at because they require radicalization, you know, on as large a scale as possible. Neoliberals want you to settle for voting. They want you to feel empowered in the use of your single vote, knowing full well it serves no purpose but that of the status quo. You know, the support of the status quo, I should say. To fight the status quo, we must always approach issues from a revolutionary perspective, outside of the boundaries and the borders that have been created to kind of corral us. Anarchism requires us to constantly evolve our approaches and expectations based on lived experience, reality, and the guiding principle of non-hierarchical mutualist freedom. As the weeks continue, I'll do my best to recommend revolutionary solutions that don't just amount to parroting the same advice of, you know, strike, march. You know, those are going to pop up again and again, though, because direct action has been proved to work towards the achievement of radical goals, you know, in the historical past. Thank you so much for tuning in to The Anti this week here on WXRW River West Radio. I have been your host, NTSC, And we will be back again next week to discuss further topics as they relate to freedom and our truly awesome shared potential. Past episodes, as always, can be found at creamcitymedia.com/anti. And more information about the show can be found on riverwestradio.com. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.